chapter 7, verse 21. Yo-yo. Yam-yam. Tanum bhakta. Yo-yo, yam-yam, tanum bhakta. Shraddhaya chitum icchati.
Shraddhaya chitum icchati.
Tasya tasya chalam shraddham.
Tasya tasya chalam shraddham.
Tameva vidadham yam.
Tameva vidadham yam.
Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta.
Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta.
Shraddhaya chitum icchati.
Shraddhaya chitum icchati.
Tasya tasya chalam shraddham.
Tasya tasya jalam shraddham.
Tameva vidadhamyaham.
Tameva vidadhamyaham.
You want to go?
Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta.
Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta.
Shraddhaya chitam icchati.
Shraddhaya chitam icchati.
Tasya tasya chalam shraddham.
Tasya tasya chalam shraddham.
Tameva vidadhamyaham.
Tameva vidadhamyaham. All right, so we'll have the word for word. Yo yo.
Yo yo.
Whoever.
Whoever.
Yam yam.
Yam yam.
Whichever.
Whichever.
Tanum.
Tanum.
Form of a demigod.
Form of a demigod.
Bhakta.
Bhakta.
Shraddhaya.
Shraddhaya.
Oh, sorry. Devotee.
Devotee.
Shraddhaya.
Shraddhaya.
With faith.
With faith.
Architum.
Architum.
To worship.
To worship.
Icchati.
Icchati.
Desires.
Desires.
Tasya tasya.
Tasya tasya.
To him.
To him.
Achalam.
Achalam.
Steady.
Steady.
Shraddham.
Shraddham.
Faith.
Faith.
Tam.
Tam.
That.
That.
Eva.
Eva.
Surely.
Surely.
Vidadhami.
Vidadhami.
Give.
Give.
Aham.
Aham.
I.
I.
So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki.
Jai.
I am in everyone's heart as a super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. I am.
I am.
In everyone's heart.
In everyone's heart.
As the super soul.
As the super soul.
As soon as one.
As soon as one.
Desires to worship.
Desires to worship.
Some demigod.
Some demigod.
I make his faith steady.
I make his faith steady.
So that he can devote.
So that he can devote.
Himself to that particular deity.
Himself to that particular deity.
Once again, I am in everyone's heart as the super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Translate purport. So if we can each read. So the first paragraph I can read, then you Arjun read the second, and then the half of the second, and then the next half. God has given independence to everyone. Therefore, if a person desires to have material enjoyment and wants very sincerely to have such facilities from the material demigod, the Supreme Lord, as Supersoul in everyone's heart, understands and gives facilities to such persons. As the Supreme Father of all living entities, He does not interfere with their independence, but gives all facilities so that they can fulfill their material desires. Some may ask why the all-powerful God gives facility to the living entities for enjoying this material world, and so lets them fall into the trap of the illusory energy. The answer is that if the Supreme Lord, as Supersoul, does not give such facilities, then there is no meaning to independence. Therefore, he gives everyone full independence, whatever one likes. But his ultimate instruction we find in the Bhagavad Gita: one should give up all other engagements and fully surrender unto him. That will make man happy.
Both the living entity and the demigods are subordinate to the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the living entity cannot worship the demigod by his own desire, nor can the demigod bestow any benediction without the Supreme Will. As it is said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, persons who are distressed in the material world go to the demigods, as they are advised in the Vedic literature. A person wanting some particular thing may worship such and such demigod. For example, a diseased person is recommended to worship the sun god. A person wanting education may worship the goddess of learning, Saraswati. And a person wanting a beautiful wife may worship the goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. In this way, there are recommendations in the Shastras, Vedic scriptures, for different modes of worship of different demigods. And because a particular living entity wants to enjoy a particular material facility, the Lord inspires him with a strong desire to achieve that benediction from that particular demigod, and so he successfully receives the benediction.
Madhu. What's the next sentence?
The particular mode of the devotional attitude.
Can you find it?
Yes.
Shall I read it?
Yeah.
Is it accurate?
Yeah.
The particular mode of the devotional attitude of the living entity towards a particular type of demigod is also arranged by the Supreme Lord. The demigods cannot infuse the living entities with such an affinity, but because he is the Supreme Lord, or the Supersoul who is present in the hearts of all living entities, Krishna gives impetus to man to worship certain demigods. The demigods are actually different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they have no independence. In the Vedic literature, it is stated, the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Supersoul is also present within the heart of the demigod. Therefore, he arranges through the demigod to fulfill the desire of the living entity. But both the demigod and the living entity are dependent on the Supreme Will. They are not independent.
Om Agyana Pimirandasya Ginamjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mishtam Statutam Svayam Rupa Kada Mayam Dhati Swapadantikam Vandeyam Shri Guru Shri Tapala Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sadhana Raghunatam Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Pradina Saitam Shri Shri Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagadapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kamsha Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanustate Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vamsa Kalpa Drupyascha Kripa Sanasim Eva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Devi Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasani Guru Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Yesterday's
things that stood out to me in the following. You can have a little bit of discussion also after, where each of you can say a few things on this purport and this verse. What I highlighted was this first part of the second paragraph, where the Prabhupada writes in purport, "The living entity cannot worship the demigod by his own desire, nor can the demigod bestow benediction without the supreme will." So, it's interesting how basically in every single step Krishna is present, and we think sometimes, okay, that's an option, you know, whether we worship the demigods, or we worship Krishna, or we worship, you know, but really it is, we cannot actually worship without the sanction and without Krishna in between. And it's good to note that, because simply by us thinking that, okay, we've got the desire, or let's say we now change, I want to worship Surya, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, for health, then you cannot actually worship, because you have to first, the desire is to be accepted by Krishna, and then he gives you the strength to actually do that worship. For the same is for the demigod, but the demigod, once you approach him, then you're like, okay, so now he's supposed to be able to give, to bless, what is it, to benedict us with our desires. But the demigod neither can do it either without the supreme will of the Lord. As the Prabhupada states, as in the Prabhupada, every blade of grass moves. And that's what we are finding. And the more we engage in devotional service, then we are finding more and more, we are more be able to see that the blade of grass is being only moved by this reason, outside of any kind of God consciousness. Our worldview is very different, that it's my choice, it's my desire, and the blade of grass is moving because of the wind, and the wind is this, and that, and that, and that. You know, we scientifically, with our sense perception, etc. So, that is an incorrect vision, in fact. And so we've been looking through those glasses for a long time. So it takes a while to see in a new way, in Shastra Chakshus, to see through the eyes of the scriptures, basically applying this knowledge and then looking at the blade of grass and being like, okay, this is only happening not because of the wind, not because of that, but because of Krishna's presence and him allowing this to happen. So in class, I just mentioned Surya Namaskar because, it says a diseased person is recommended to worship the Son of God. And so, like this morning it was mentioned by Mahaji, Vishakha Mahaji, that it's only this material world and basically the two aspects of this material world are like dry stool and wet stool, and both are simply, subordinate. One may be like dry, but with, because of the energy of the sun touching it, but both of them are wet stool. So all this material, once if it's disconnected to Krishna, then it is of no use, it's just still Surya Namaskar, if it is disconnected, it's just for health. But if you use health for Krishna, then it's worth it. But if it's disconnected, then it doesn't have any value and can be negated. All can be all negated and pointless. Though it might be activity in moral goodness or ours, etc. Therefore, when we read our listening class, it's very important. So I appreciate this, even in Gita classes, even though I appreciate it from a distance usually. Section of the Purport, which is interesting. Demigods cannot infuse the living entity with such an affinity, but because he is the Supreme Lord or the Super Soul present in the hearts of all living entity, Krishna gives the impetus to the man to worship a certain demigod. So even that intelligence or the impetus, let's say, it's not coming from demigods that, you know, basically the credit should not go to the demigods that, oh, Surya is giving us health, you know, and therefore we should go to him. No, it's not Surya's ability that is making us think of, like, okay, let's go to him. You know, it is Krishna. Krishna behind Surya, you know, it's the Krishna-ness in Surya that is attractive in this way, and Krishna is giving us the intelligence to get there, and it's Krishna that is with that part of that aspect of Krishna which is in Surya more than another demigod, and this blessing of Krishna to Surya to give health, that is what we are looking at. So basically the point is that, you know, all solutions lie with Krishna. So similarly, if we go to certain demigods, that their source is Krishna. So, if we go to their source, then, you know, our health also, since Krishna is the source of the health and health power of Surya. So, therefore, we should go to Krishna. So this makes us all dependent, and this makes Krishna pervading and everywhere. I was recently reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then basically it says that, you know, one should see Krishna being at the same time within everything and not within everything. That vision should be constantly there. So that to not think of Krishna or not blaming him for a certain thing or not see him per se in, but this is all his manifestations in things that are not beautiful or our vision of things, you know, that should not be, let's say, negative things arrive us and that, you know, then sometimes we might want to blame or this or that, but in a sense it is all coming from Krishna, but so that's this aspect that, you know, not directly you should see Krishna and blame Krishna, but at the same time, see Krishna. So sometimes, you know, people sing, or I know a song, what is it? It's Me Against the World, and there's movies or songs that feel like, and it show people like that. So that's first analysis, okay, you against the world, me against the world, and then once you find out that it's your perception, your desires, your karma, then you come back to the self. And therefore Krishna says states like, of all knowledges, of all realizations, I'm the realization of the self, self-realization. So, this point of me against the world is I like that because basically it points out the that it's not our position to be here, and we should try and see properly, and then we can see oh, this is a certain blessing, that both the good and the bad, and not be so enamored by the good and the bad, etc. Seeing it like a dream, this world can be perceived as a dream, a dreaming state. It's very real, similarly as a dream is very real. And my mental speculation is that we only have dreams in this world so that we can make this analogy, so that we can basically imagine how the insignificance of time span and in many ways of our stay in this material world, like that of a dream, which is very real when in it. And afterwards, you might, Prabhupada goes into detail, so he says, you might remember it a little bit, the dream, you might, it might affect you slightly, but it doesn't really affect your day, you know? It doesn't really, you know, yeah, you can tell your friends about it, and you know, it could be heavy, this and that, but in the end, they're not going to take it so seriously, because it's a dream after all, right? So, it affects to a certain extent, but it really doesn't seriously affect. So similarly, this state we're in, is of that nature. So, but naturally, our view of the world, it takes time to see. That's why we need a lot of practice to go on, and therefore we need to read statements over and over again. Therefore we need to read over and over again so that we can slowly, like the same way we got bad habits in our system or views of the world in our system, that we start to understand that the right way of seeing things. So yeah, I like sometimes to look at every experience that I'm having and trying to see, you know, basically there's two here. It's just me and Krishna. Every other, even including my body, it's all part of this relationship of me and Krishna. It's all a play in this. Krishna, every single aspect of this material world is trying to get us to go back to him, and all these experiences he's giving in order to, you know, like a chess game, while while leaving us our free will intact, he is trying to reinstate us in our original position, in our happy position, in our position of servitor of Krishna. And you know, he's trying, like when you want somebody to love you, it's not by force, but trying to have us come to him by our own desires. And so this world really is not much more than that. The relationships, every single aspect of this world, in fact, can be seen as Krishna's way of instilling within us the understanding of our original position, the understanding of to serve Krishna, the understanding that Krishna loves us, and that we are best in our original position. So, yeah, this is a bit what I wanted to say. Anybody else wants to say comment on this?
Can I have a question? Okay. So, you're saying that Krishna and ourselves, sometimes we have to just trust Krishna and understand, like, this is everything here, nothing moves without the sanction of the Lord. But how do we perceive what is Krishna? What is making us closer to Krishna? What is making us further from Krishna? Subtly, because sometimes it will be that we're driven by different forces, and so it may not be so clear. So if someone wanted a systematic, clear definition of how to perceive what is Krishna conscious and what is more of a shadow, Krishna consciousness, well, disguised as actually something else.
Yeah, thank you. Very nice question. So I was recently in Thailand, and there I lived outside of the temple, like 3 hours away. And so my answer would be who says basically the two things, two principles of Krishna consciousness. Basically, is that always remember Krishna, never forget him. So that is really the answer to this question. The answer. That's 100% something like that. And basically, yeah, whatever is reminding us of Krishna, that is what is good. Whatever we can see Krishna in, that is good. And when we're not thinking of Krishna, that is not good. So, what is conducive, right? That's a bit of a question. Like, what is bringing us close and what's bringing us further is that which reminds us of Krishna, and that which makes us forget of Krishna. So, basically, that's the two points. And my practical realization about it is when in Thailand I was living so far away from the temple, I felt so disconnected in some ways. But then also I realized really the essence is to be thinking of Krishna and the devotee. And if you see almost kinds of situations and they are bringing you closer in the sense of meditation wise, then that's good. Like, I was a bit of a congregation member, let's say, in Thailand. Because only the weekends I would go. But in some ways I felt almost more Krishna conscious because meditating all week on that weekend versus sometimes we may be in the temple community, but thinking about the movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's really that link. And that's, it's kind of a gray area. It's something very individual and very personal. Like a relationship, it's very individual. And so in this way, that which reminds us of Krishna, and that which makes us forget Krishna, that's the problem. So if we are in a horrible situation where we're thinking of Krishna, then we're well situated or we're getting close to Krishna. If we're in the most devotional, basically Krishna all over 360 degrees around us, like here in the temple or wherever you look, there's a painting or Krishna, but still our mind can be thinking of sex or something.
Mm.
But we are perfectly situated, or then you're situated in a club or this or that, but you're thinking of Krishna, then that's the so therefore it's so important. I don't want to not stress the point of association and temple and Krishna paintings, etc.
Mm.
Because they do that. But it's a personal line, or a personal movement. We have a personal relationship with Krishna. And by no means does he want to destroy that.
Yeah.
And that's why he doesn't affect our freedom of free will.
I'm thinking about the ashram situation. So, currently as a student, I'm not practicing brahmacharya life, but I'm not exactly married, So I'm like in this in-between sort of stage. So, my logic is I've not really had brahmacharya training ever, but to the best of my ability, practice Krishna consciousness. And naturally, I think I'm going to get married. But here's my approach, because marriage means a lot of things. But by getting yourself into marriage, I found even just from considering someone or considering some form of relationship, the mind becomes very absorbed in that. And sort of Krishna, he is there, but he's not there. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not at the forefront of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess it's the selfish desire to get, want to get married, and so we can, so you can produce kids and purify ourselves like that. But so I'm just wondering, is it necessary for you to have a motive that Krishna should be in the center of a relationship before you get married, or should it be like you just find someone and sort of gradually purify yourself and then naturally remember Krishna by practicing sadhana? Or should you, by going into that route, you should be fixed on Krishna as the goal and really know what you're doing. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I'm understanding a little bit. And let me repeat it to you, then you'll know if I understood it. So, basically, what I understood is that if you know, there's a bit of an option there, whether, placing Krishna, you know, obviously in the front center, versus, you know, placing
Krishna on the sideline.
I'm Krishna on the sideline, but with the hope that he comes in and, and then you mix to it the ashrams, right? So it's a, so that for me is another question, because I think ashrams are important to be within an ashram, right? But then if you're saying, look, if I'm entering an ashram, then I feel like at the moment not yet have placed Krishna in the center of the relationship in this regard, and therefore I don't think I should go with this relationship, therefore not yet in an ashram. It's gray. It's a gray area. It's a kind of question that, I've recently come to understand that guru is one who, you know, helps you in regard to ashram and in regard to deciding, you know, which ashram to enter. You typically are supposed to ask permission, you know, whether to enter brahmacharya or to enter grihastha ashram. I was just reading the purport of 7th canto of Prahlada Maharaj speaking. And so Prabhupada writes that we should ask our guru before we attempt to have a child with our wife. So to that extent, I mean, this was in this purport, wrote that. I mean, this is one purport. But this is the importance of asking spiritual master about these regards. And the guru has a view from above. So, and like a helicopter view from above, and we're on the road, we're kind of like, let's say you're on a motorcycle, and you have this vision, but you don't see what's coming. You don't see what's going on, and there's many. So this, gurus are seen as that one who knows it. And in terms of ashrams, like I said, I think it's important because these ashrams are, no ashram that's, there's no stagnancy in Krishna consciousness. So it's either you go up or you go down. There's no waiting, there's no in between.
So I understood that you're saying it would be a good idea to get direction from the guru, because then he can give you a sort of personal idea of how to act, because then it's okay, so that's a good consideration. That's very practical also.
And either way, I think you will never lose giving priority to Krishna. It might be, sometimes it's giving priority to Krishna is something very intelligent, something very deep, something that sure. Mm. And even if you make a mistake, you know, giving priority to Krishna, giving immature priority to Krishna, then, you know, you can fix that, because Krishna gives you a second chance. I would rather be with the group of somebody that gives too much priority or too quickly priority, or not too, I mean,